Hey, I'm Coach Treggs, and welcome to my podcast. Okay, guys, how you all doing? It's Coach Treggs here, the founder of 30 Plus Men's Fitness, and welcome back to the Coach Treggs podcast and Treggs TV. I'm absolutely delighted today to be joined by a very busy man. He was teed up by my very good friend, Wayne Thomas, who was on the first edition. And he said, I'm definitely going to get Big Chris to do this. So I'm delighted to have you on. Former professional footballer, a glittering career, which I worked out is around about 19 years. Scotland international. And now a very busy talk sport host and presenter, Chris Iwelimo. I hope I've got that right.
Perfect, Triggs. Absolutely perfect. How are you doing? You all good?
I am fantastic. Chris, I really appreciate this. I know how busy you are. We've been trying to make this happen. You're here, there and everywhere with TalkSport. But I'm really, really delighted to have you on. Obviously, I've been doing a bit of research for this podcast. We're exactly the same age. You're 42, I'm 42. Your birthday's in August. My birthday's in October. So we've got lots in common. So I want to get into it, mate. I know we've got about 45 to 50 minutes, and less hopefully we're going to give the guys some great value. So first of all, before we even get into it, how are you finding the Euros so far, buddy?
Yeah, it's been good. Just had some breaking news this morning, though. So Billy Gilmour's now been tested positive for COVID. You know, I'm gutted for him. You know, as a nation and all that, I know we've got a little bit of quality and depth that we can come in, but I thought he was outstanding against England. Thought he was. So he'd have been on cloud nine, wouldn't he? So that's brought him crashing to the floor. Obviously, 10 days he's got to self-isolate for now. So even if we qualify, I don't even think he can play in the game. It's massive tomorrow for me. It's even bigger than England, Scotland, obviously Scotland, Croatia tomorrow evening. So I don't know when this podcast is going out. So I'll just say that
so much can happen. Yeah, I mean this will probably be out in a week, and a lot's going to have been decided by then. Probably
past
the quarters. Okay, so look, let's get into it, Chris. For anyone that's new to myself, new to following the Coach Treggs podcast, who are you? Tell us a little bit of backstory, and then we're going to basically go from the beginning and talk about your career.
All right. Well, I'm Chris Iwelimo, striker position. I'm Scottish, proud Scot. Grew up in Ayrshire, Kilmarnock, born in Coatbridge, Belsall, just the other side of Glasgow. But like you say, started professional footballer at St Mirren Football Club. Turned professional when I was 18. I played and was involved with the first team from probably 16 and a half onwards. Finished my schooling, always wanted to be a teacher. I had the option of university professional football when I before I signed my first professional contract. And like you said, 19 years later, the rest is history. It's taken me to Denmark, playing in the Danish Super League, playing in the second Bundesliga in Germany. Got to the last 16 of the Europa League with the German side, Alemannia Aachen, and obviously England. I played in England most of my days, English Championship, played in the English. In fact, I've been promoted from England, every single league in the EFL. So I got promoted from League 2 to League 1 with Scunthorpe. I got promoted out of League 1 on three occasions with Brighton, Stoke and Colchester. And then obviously I got promoted with Wolves to the Premier League from the Championship. And I've won the Scottish Cup with St Johnstone as well. So there's an LDV Vans Trophy with Stoke City. So there's been a lot of very lucky. I know how fortunate I am, Treggs. You know what I mean? It's one of those, a lot of players go through long careers and they never get to a final, or they never win the final. They don't have cup winners medals. They don't have promotion medals. So it was only kind of when I retired at the age of 36, 2014, that I thought, wow. You know, I mean, that's me that I'm talking about. You know, I represented my country, which is every footballer's, I guess, dream and drive to go and do that. I have been very fortunate. It's taken me all over the world. And to be fair, I've loved every single minute.
Brilliant stuff. Okay, so we've got quite a big Scottish following, loads of members from up in Scotland. And one of the lads said, wow, Chris grew up where I grew up, in Coatbridge?
Well, I was born in Coatbridge. But yeah. I grew up in Kilmarnock, a little village just outside Kilmarnock, Comores, from about 3 years onwards. And my mum's still there now. But yeah, all my family, all my mum's side is Coatbridge, Airdrie. So it's a massive family as well.
Brilliant stuff. So at what age did you sort of start to kind of get into the game? I've got two boys. They're kind of 8 and 7 and they love the game. And they're always saying to me, Daddy, you know, oh, so-and-so's been picked up by this club. Do you think I got a chance? And I'm like, look, I said, lad, you are so young. Like, I had a few trials as a youngster. I played for Cheltenham Town, and that's how I kind of knew Tomo. But I didn't start to go on trials till I was about 12 or 13. So yeah. At what age did you really get into it? And at what age did you think, oh, you know, there could be something in this?
Well, funny enough, it was about the same kind of age as you, 12, 13. I was always, I love football. Like you say, like your boys, 6, 7, 8, you know, always out there with the ball all day long. And it was in the from the village actually. Colin Gillan and Ross Watson were just up the park playing. And funny enough, I started as a goalkeeper.
Wow!
So yeah, but only for the fact that Colin Gillan was in goals and he wanted to come out and be centre back. And then when you're playing up and you're playing with all the football games up in the park, he said, "You know what? You're decent in goals. Why don't you come to Loudoun Valley?" So I think they learned very quickly that I was better outfield. So I was kind of given the freedom, Loudoun Valley Boys Club under 12s and under 13s. But I was coming out as a goalkeeper and dribbling and all that. And then they just have a centre-back. So I remember my first game, it was funny enough because my birthday's on the 1st of August and the deadline up in Scotland for the Scottish Cup and the Strathclyde Cup was the 1st of August, which meant that I was either too old for that age group that I was at because it came right on that deadline. And it was Colin Gillan would go back in goals for these cup games. And I'd usually then think, right, okay, well, I'll play outfield for these. And that's when I got spotted. So Kilmarnock Football Club, Ayr United Football Club, they spotted me playing outfield, centre-back, centre-midfield. When I was up top, that was it. I just never went back in goals again. Colin Gillan had to kind of put the gloves back on and that was it. But funny enough, I went to Ayr United. George Burley was the manager of the first team there, but I was Ayr United schoolboy at under 14s. And they let me go. They let me go at 15. They let me go at 15 and a half, saying that I wasn't quite what they were looking for.
Wow.
And it was George Burley who gave me my first Scottish cap. And he let me go at 15 years old. Crazy, full circle, isn't it? Unbelievable.
Wow.
So it was, as soon as I got let go by Ayr United, I was in with, obviously, Kilmarnock Football Club. I was, at 15 years old, I was playing under-18s football. We pressed there, things like that. And we played against the St Mirren under-18s side. We beat them 3-0. I got a hat-trick on the day, and then they invited me to go in and join them. It was just one of the weeks off school.
Yeah.
And I was in there basically from Monday to Saturday training. They very quickly put me on a schoolboys form. I played 6 or 7 reserve games, got six or seven goals. I got a goal a game. And then basically Jimmy Bone was the manager, Kenny McDowell, assistant manager, came to me and says, "You're in the first team squad this weekend. So we'll contact your school. We'll get you off school on the Friday so you can come in and do a bit of training."
Amazing.
And I remember I had all my school friends. I had about 16 teachers in the stand, obviously all family there. I come off the bench with about 25 minutes to go against Dumbarton and get my first professional goal as a schoolboy. It's just, I couldn't write it.
Wow.
I couldn't write it.
So you were 16?
When I was 16, yeah. So wow. just before my 17th birthday, yeah. And I remember all my mates. That's when you're all sitting and you're starting to have a few bevies and that. And I wasn't allowed in bars. They knew exactly how old I was because it was in all the bloody papers.
Sure,
you know what
sure.
I mean? So yeah. So it was one of them. It was, I think they kind of felt sorry for me. And I got allowed in and had a few beers and things like that. But great times, mate. You know, very lucky. I've got to say, very fortunate. Let go. I always, like you say, I had the option. I had the option of university, and it was one of them that Jimmy Bone, my first manager, always said to me, he would have preferred me to go to university and be part-time, because then you've always got something to fall back on, and that's very true, because you don't know what's round the corner for you.
Yeah.
You could get injured, anything could happen. Very lucky, 19 years, I had about 10, 11 operations in that 19 years.
Wow.
So there's a lot, but it was, like you say, very fortunate. And like you say, you need a lot of luck as well, but you have to put the graft in.
So going back to that, because I mean, I wanted to be a pro growing up and I never made it. I've got the next best job. I'm in the fitness industry, which I love. But like when I went, I love watching old videos of like, you know, players scoring and stuff like that. So I just want to, I want to picture this now. You're 16 years old. Have you, you've had your growth spurt? Because I know you're a tall lad. So
no, but funny enough, I got told I was only going to grow to 5. So about 10, 11 years old, I got told I'd only grow to 5'7". Right. That's how small I was. And then I remember at secondary school, I was in the first row, the group picture, your year picture. And then every year I was going back a row. And then I got knee pains, heel pains, back pains. Oh. I shot up. So at 16, I would say I was about 6 foot.
Wow.
But I was stick thin as well. If you go through my Instagram, I'm sure there's a little
I'll have a look.
There's a little picture, mate. Yeah.
So let me just picture this. All of a sudden, they've said, right, Friday off school, you're in the team, you come on now as a sub. What was the crowd that day? 4,000 or 5,000, more or less?
Yeah, you're probably talking about that. Yeah, 4,000 or 5,000 at Love Street as well, the old stadium. Fantastic atmosphere there. And like you say, one of the young boys coming through as well. So the fans, I had the support straight away. They knew all about me from the reserve games. They hear me that I'm scoring goals, and all of a sudden, come off the bench.
So what's that feeling like? Like you're warming up, and then you go on and you score. What's it like?
Yeah, it is. There's nothing that can replicate it. You know, it's like I say it all the time. Scoring goals, it's the hardest thing to do in football. You know what I mean? But the feeling you get when you do it, there's nothing that compares. But at that age, it was all, I was used to scoring goals. There was no fear in me, you know.
Yep.
I was very raw, which probably it can kind of get coached out of players nowadays. And that's probably, you know, there's pros and cons to that, because that rawness, it's, you know, you can't read them. They bring it into the games. There's still players that have played the game professionally. You can see they've got that raw element to their game.
Yeah.
And they're unpredictable, because they don't even know what they're going to do next. You know what I mean? So it was one of those things. To talk about that feeling, to how proud I was to have the family, friends, teachers and all that there, knowing that you've scored. Okay, I did come off the bench and we were winning 3-1, but still to get the goal, to make it 4-1.
Amazing.
Job done, you know what I mean? Yeah, amazing.
So we're talking here. I've got your Wikipedia. That was like 1995. I mean, what was the physicality like going in? Even though you're a big guy, you know, you've had your growth spurt, what was the physicality like playing in that Scottish league at that age? What was the kind of like, because Tomo said, you know, he would get like guys coming up to him saying, I'm going to smash you, mate. And if you do that again to me again, I'm going to break your legs. What was it? Were there people in your ear giving you grief?
No, well, I was protected. I had some fantastic experienced pros. When I came off the bench, I came on for Barry Lovetti, who actually gave me my player of the season and top goal scorer and players player at Stewarton. He actually came and presented it the season before, when I was playing under-18s football for my club team, Stewarton Annick, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then I'm coming off the bench. He's coming off and I'm coming on for him. Within Amazing. 10 months after he's presented me with the trophies. But yeah, I was protected. Of course, you get it. That's part and parcel of the game. You know, the mental side of it, players trying to get in your head. Back in the day, I had a little bit of pace. I've not heard that for a long time. Use your pace to get in behind. I'm like, ah, bloody hell, 21 onwards. And I've never heard that again. You know what I mean? But the thing is, yeah, but we're probably getting a little bit ahead of it. But it's so important, the sports science and the fitness element to things. Because one of my best mates was a fashion show. He travelled the world, was on fashion shows, and he gave me his weights programme. So I went from about 13.6 to about 17.3, just complete muscle bound. I tell you what, but
as a footballer,
oh my goodness! So I'll tell you, but that was when I played for the Danish side in the Danish Super League.
Yeah.
So we had the winter break. I was injured, and I swear to you, he's gave me his programme, and you know, like, I'm going to the gym every single day. I'm doing my cardio and all that, but then I started wearing the little muscle vests and all that. You know, when you're looking in the mirror and you're going, boy, it got in my head. See, when I walked back, when I flew back to Denmark and I walked in, the manager, the sports scientist, the trainer, they just looked at me. I never seen the boys for about 5-6 weeks. I was just running. I got shin splints, basically just to try and lose it all. And that changed
my
game.
That muscle's going to slow you down.
Yeah, changed my game altogether. Changed my game altogether, Mark. And it was one of them. So that was, what age was I then? That was just before Stoke bought me, 19, 20 years old. So basically, at 18 years old, I am 13.6. And I mean, I can move, you know what I mean? all of a sudden my game had to change. I became the target man, the bomb, not so mobile, but Scotty Stick. You know, when I get going, you can move, but still, it changed my game altogether. But,
but I mean, yeah, 13.5 is heavy for a footballer anyway. I mean, you look at someone like Lukaku and you go, he's about 14.5, and you're going, that's heavy. So you went from 13.5 to over 17 of muscle.
Stone. You think, I swear to you, my arms were about, honestly, about 16 to 18 inches. It was ridiculous. I've got pictures. I'll have to send them to you when I'm sitting at home on the winter break. And I'm cuddling my sister on my mum's sofa, and my arms are like, boom. I'm like, what is going on? Wow. Like, I'm not even that. I'm about 17 stone now, and I'm not even that big. And I played then, and I was only young. But it just shows you the importance that, you know, sports science is massive now, because I never done weights at any club that I was at as a professional athlete, because I would say to them, like, I just have to look at a weight, and genetically,
you're probably genetically, very gifted, and you just
So you'd have that argument. Tony Daly, someone that you know very well at Wolverhampton Wanderers. Yeah. He gave me a program. It was boring as hell, by the way. It was basically I had to lift 95% of my maximum, only 2 reps on about 10 different stations. I had to wait so many minutes between each station, but then after I'd finished the 10, I had to wait about 6-7 minutes to do it again. I had to go through it 6 times. Wow. Unbelievable, by the way. But I felt great. Wolves probably got me into the best shape of my life. Yep. That's with muscle mass, body mass. But like you say, sports science plays a massive part. But going back to the early days, it was very much you ate what you wanted, you trained what even my first, when I turned professional, my first pre-season, I was flying. I mean, I don't know if you're allowed to swear, but I blew everyone out. I blew everyone out the water. Jimmy Bowen and Kenny McDowell said, we're going to break you. We're going to break you. This, I swear to you, it was the last day of pre-season. We're doing, the five cones, of like 10 metres between each. Yep. You're going from one to the other. So I basically, this is the last day. I blew everyone away. It was me and Stuart Taylor, who's Paul Lambert's assistant. At most places that he's been, Stoke City, Wolves, he's brought Stuart Taylor in with him. Stuart Taylor was one of the experienced pros, but the fittest lad in the team. It was me and Stuart Taylor that was basically racing every single day to see who could be the best.
Wow.
And I remember the last day, my engine blew. I still won the last race, but my engine blew about just before the finishing line. But the Kenny McDowell and Jimmy Bowen going about celebrating, we've done it! We've broke them!
Love it.
What happened? You know what happened, Mark? The last day of pre-season, what do we do as a group of players? We all go on the piss. We all go and celebrate on the piss. Put you back 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Put you back. That's how it was back in the day. You go and have an all-day session to celebrate finishing
pre-season,
your
pre-season. Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable, eh?
So, obviously, we've got 45 minutes, a bit less now, and I'm looking at your Wikipedia. I mean, you've been all over, like you said in the beginning. So, what I want to do is kind of like, I want to talk about, obviously, with it being a fitness podcast, I want to talk about that kind of like the diet, nutrition, the sports science, because obviously you retired, you know, 6-7 years ago now. And I want you to kind of talk about how it evolved, because talking to Tomo about this, I mean, you know, when he signed for Torquay, he said that there wasn't really much emphasis on like diet, nutrition and things like that. And now when you like take a look from the outside, it's like my son was saying to me the other day, so like, daddy, like if I became a professional, did the club, what kind of food do I eat? Did the club feed me? What about this? And I said, look, son, it's all laid on. You know, there's sports scientists, there's dieticians. Yeah. How did you, what was that like in the beginning? And how did it evolve to when you kind of finish your career? Was there a lot more emphasis on that?
Well, I was probably quite lucky that when I went to Denmark, they were already kind of thinking about things like that, you know, making sure that you were fueling properly, you were recovering properly, you know, even the training time, you know, we used to train at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So that was when I was 18, 19. That's when they started coming into the probably English game, probably the last probably 5-6 years, because they would, you'd go, if it was a night game, the day before you'd try and train at the same time. It just gets the body ready for that kind of challenge. I know that we at Wolves, we used to have the Lumi lights that would actually move the body clock forward or backwards if you were going on pre-season tour, so you wouldn't get jet lag. We went to Australia, so we were all coming in at 6 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning, eating breakfast together, going out and training. Just then, when we flew to Australia, we never had jet lag. So sports science, nutrition and all that has come into the game massively. Again, I've got to agree with Tomo. When I came back to Stoke City, very much left to your own. You know, you'd have your bowls of cereal. You think about. I remember at Watford when Zola and the Pozzo family took over at Watford, they brought their own chefs from Udinese. Wow. We weren't allowed to have bowls of cereal because they didn't want us drinking milk, because it takes about 6-7 hours for the body to actually get through milk. We shouldn't really be drinking it anyway if you actually go into the depths of it. But it was massive. It was massive, all these little things. Now, you've got to remember, I've just told you I was 17 stones. So when Stoke actually brought me from Danish football, I was about probably 15 and a half stone. I was a big lad, you know. I could move, I could throw myself about, but you could look at me and say, boy, he's a big lad. All of a sudden, I remember I contacted a nutritionist and I'd done a food diary for about 3 weeks. I weighed all my food and I gave him, and he said, you know what? He says, your diet's actually very good. He says, but where you're getting it wrong is your portion sizes and what you're eating at the certain times of the day. Yeah. And I was like, what do you mean? He says, well, you're eating too much at the end of the day and you're not eating enough at the start. So I went, right, okay. He says, but your diet's good. He says, of course, you've got to have a little bit of balance. You've got to make sure you have your cheat days and things like that. But he said, right, try and eat this. He says, let me look at what you eat anyway, and I'm just going to tell you what you've got to eat. Unbelievable, right? So you think about this. In the morning, what I had to eat, it was hard for me to eat in the morning, and I was still to snack on the way to training. I followed this. And I went from about, what, say 15 and a half stone to about 14 stone.
Wow.
Very, very, very quickly, by the way. Obviously, I'm training as well, so I'm playing games. It dropped, and I felt better for it. And that's when my career kind of kicked on, you understand? So I was at Colchester when I'd done this. Then all of a sudden, at Charlton, at Wolves, at Watford, at Burnley, Bristol City, you know what I mean? It kicked on because... It was easier for me to manage my weight, and then that was one of those things. Of course, I liked. I wasn't really a drinker when I played.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you'd have probably one or two nights out throughout a season. That's a long period of time, but I wasn't a big drinker. So that then kind of plays into my favour as well. So you can focus now. I've got to say, I know I played with players in fantastic shape that went out every Saturday and drank. Yeah. And they would come in, but it does catch up on you at some point. It will catch up on you at some point. So that was big for me. And that was, you know, I think all diet, like you said, I was watching your story yesterday about the 75 and hard.
Sure.
And I think it's important that everything that you have a balance.
Got to have a balance, yeah.
You have to have a balance. And I'll tell you why. You know, I got promoted to the Premier League with Wolverhampton Wanderers. And I remember I went away. We went away on a family holiday. We had a few families there, a few friends. And they've all got kids and all that. Every evening I'd say, right, everyone, that's all. You're all coming back with me. So all the parents can go and kick on. I put them all to bed and all that. And then every now and again, you get a knock on the door. The parents would come in and take their kids back to their rooms. And I'd be out in the morning at 5:30, 6 o'clock, running the beach. And I'd done this, you know, religiously. Yeah. I never had any cake. You know, I love my cake when you're on a holiday. You know, you have a little bit of dessert. I made sure I was in the best shape of my life. I came back. The first 10 days of pre-season, cigar was out, all the ugly running, no love problem it. At all. You know, you're thinking, I'm going to hit the floor running, Premier League. What I've wanted to do all my days is reach the top, Premier League. We fly to Australia, 20 minutes in against Perth Glory, I break my foot. Yeah. Not from a challenge. It was just one of those, I think it was maybe from a couple of days earlier. I think it was Richard Stearman, a strong challenge in training. But it's just for the fact that I'd probably done too much. You know, I'd prepared, whereas I hadn't.
Yeah.
So no matter what shape I was in, that was four months without football.
Yeah.
4 months without football, no matter if I was in the best shape of my life, body fats, muscle mass, the fitness, boom. 4 months without football. And I said to myself then, never again will I go all out.
Yeah.
You have to have balance, because you know what? You have to enjoy it as well. If it's a slog, if it's a hard slog, it's very easy to say, nah, I'm not having it. You know what I mean?
I say this to a lot of clients. I say there's no happy ending to an unenjoyable journey. And that was what we're not going to talk about too much, but that's what that me doing the 75 hard. I quickly realized that I don't want to be training twice a day at 42. Actually, I've got good results and got myself lean, having two rest days a week. So, you know, it made me kind of take stock. But look, let's get back to this. There's quite a lot of questions I want to get through this next 25 minutes. So let's talk about highlights and let's talk about lowlights. So, you know, you had a long time playing a game. Can you, is there like two or three highlights that really stick out for you, bud?
Well, you got, I got promoted 5 times. So all promotions, I think there's certain goals that my first goal for Stoke against Millwall, you know, it was unbelievable. You know, it's little things. I wasn't even on the bench that day, by the way. It was crazy. I was up in the players' lounge, and then all of a sudden Steph Stephenson comes in and says, "Oh, Stephen Thordarson's went down injured, you're on the bench." I come off and score the winning goal, 1-2-1, and that was it. Never looked back, really. So there is highlights. There's great relationships that I've had through that period. You know, Mick McCarthy, one of the best managers around, Phil Parkinson, Tony Pulis, people that I still speak to today. If I've ever got like a life dilemma that I've got to discuss some with, they'll always be honest with you. They'll always give you from their point of view, outside the box, as they say. But yeah, I think promotions is a great thing. Obviously, Scotland, you know, that I know we'll probably touch on it. That was probably my highest and lowest point of my career all came at the same time. You know what I mean? And that's, you know what I mean? I'm a proud Scot, you know, just getting involved, being involved with the group. To pull on that dark blue jersey, you know, at Hampden Park, my first start against Argentina, Diego Maradona's first game in charge of Argentina. I'm starting, I'm number 9 for Scotland at Hampden Park that night. You know what I mean? I'll have to send you all these. I've got all the shots framed. Yeah. You know, I've got even my debut for Scotland coming off the bench against Norway. I know I have that miss, but that's framed. I've got a picture of me missing that goal in with the shot. You know, I'll have to send you it all, Mark.
Send
you know,
it me on WhatsApp. What was that? What's the biggest crowd you played in front of? A full Hampden, yeah.
Hampden fools, what, 55,000. I've played at the Millennium full. What's that? That's about 65, 70 is at the Millennium Stadium. I played at Wembley, the old Wembley, full as well. That was Bristol City against Stoke City. That, you're looking up at the 80s, 90s there.
Wow.
You know, I've been very lucky. You know, even with the German side, we went over to, we played against Sevilla in the Europa League. I got a young Sergio Ramos's shot when he was only a young lad, just before he went to Real Madrid. That's all framed. I've been lucky, you know. Look, the cup competitions, you know, I've got. It's been one hell of a journey, you know. But there's that many highs. There's so many highs, and of course, you know, as a striker, you're gonna go through a few dry spells. So that's probably what you count as lows. But obviously, the Scotland miss, you know, that was...
Talk us through it, mate. Talk us through it. What was the game? It was an international game.
Well, it was against Norway. I was playing at Wolves. I'd scored 7 goals in 4 or 5 games for Wolves. I was on fire. I'd just been sent off for headbutting Sean St. Ledger, but he headbutted me. I never even headbutted him. So I've just scored a hat-trick. We're 3-0 up against Preston. We're the only team, I think, at the time in English football that were unbeaten. We're 3-0 up. I've got all 3 goals. He sticks a head on me and lands about 4 metres away. I turned to Martin Atkinson and he's got the red card out at me. I went, what are you doing? What are you doing? I said, I've scored a hat-trick here. I says, he's just stuck the head on me. And I remember, because me and Sean had the same agent, and I've grabbed Sean. I says, look, you're coming with me. And he did, to be fair. We went into Martin Atkinson's room. And Sean, he said, oh, look, it was an accidental collision of heads. He says, it wasn't a headbutt. And Martin Atkinson, to be fair, said, look, I'll have a look at it. He says, Chris, did you get the match ball? I said, yeah, Martin, I did. And then all of a sudden, we've appealed it. Obviously, Sean, no. They actually usually when it's a field appeal, you get an extra game banned. So the 3 games turned to 4. Mine stayed at 3. But it said it was, I never got sent off for a headbutt, but it was an over-aggressive approach. So just because...
You're such a big...
Unbelievable. Yeah. It was embarrassing. It's never been a red card. Yeah. So basically, I had a couple of games that I wasn't playing before I joined up with the Scotland squad. But I genuinely thought I was going to be starting that Saturday. The training was unbelievable. Everything was going my way. The gaffer was putting me in and partnering me up. Touch was on point. Felt great in training. And then, you know what? When George Burley actually said the team, I was gutted when I wasn't starting. But then, obviously, when you're on the bench, you're thinking, right, okay, the message goes out to the family, friends, teachers as well. But I'll tell you what, there was some teachers coming for that game as well. Me and Steve Fletcher come on at half-time, and about 6 minutes into the second half, the moment comes. Now, I've watched it. I'll be honest with you, Mark, as well. If VAR was about, if VAR was about, I'm about probably 15 centimetres offside. If you look at it, so the linesman could have done me a bloody favour by putting his bloody fag up, and people would have thought, you know what, he was offside anyway.
One of them.
But I'd have finished that 99 times out of 100. I don't know, I've looked at it, I just take a big stride. I take a big stride, and when it's fired across, it's like I'm then trying to adjust my feet.
Yeah.
And it comes off my right heel, and basically skims outside of the post, by the way.
Watched
and
then, it this morning, and then, yeah.
Round, and then goes round the other side. So, again, it just wasn't to be, but it is what it is. You know, that was a hard moment. To be fair, I carry on. I have a very good 45 minutes. Even after the chance, it's a very good game. We finished 0-0. You know, not another chance fell to me on the day, but still, everything else was good. And then I remember the only place I wanted to be after that was back in the Wolves dressing room. To be fair, yeah. And I scored 10 goals in my next 7-8 games for Wolves. So it's just the way it was. It was just one of them.
Okay, so two questions I want to ask you before I get in for some other people. We got about 10-15 minutes, if that's cool. Best player you've played with and best player you've played against.
See, this is a. I like the physicality, you know, the battles, you know. So for me, I'd probably have to say Vidic. You know, I think, wow. Yeah.
What absolute. Was he like? My dad will love that. He's a Man U fan. He's in the other room. Yeah.
Yeah. Just an absolute monster. But I love that physicality. You know, I really enjoyed that. I will say, you know, Gabriel Heinze, United. Right. So when I was playing against Argentina, there's a ball that's just been clipped up into the right channel. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, I'm going to smash him. Oh, I swear to you, right? I'm watching the ball. I'm seeing him coming. I'm running across. I thought, oh, this is going to hurt. Boom, I'm on my ass. He's obviously thinking, oh, here comes the big man. I'm absolutely.
Wow.
Unbelievable. What a hard, hard player, by the way.
Wow.
So I'd say Vidic would probably be my hardest opponent. The best player for very different reasons. I loved, when I was at Charlton Football Club, Andy Reid. Reid, Northern Ireland international.
Yes, remember him.
What a player, by the way. Could do anything with a ball. No matter how tight it was, I knew. Very, very similar to Peter Hoekstra, who came to Stoke City from Ajax as well. They were unbelievable. No matter if they had five players up, so much ability, but me and Andy are still very close friends to this day. What an absolute footballer he was, by the way.
Brilliant. Okay, so like moving on now, I want to just ask a couple of questions, and then we'll round up with kind of like life after football and everything you're up to now and sort of plans for the future. So, I had a message from a client saying, can you ask Chris this? What he wish he did more of as a young athlete?
I think the diet and things and all that was good. I would say, and I did work. I always tried to do that a little bit extra. You know, I made sure. I think I could have done more there. You know, get in earlier. I always loved the game. You know, I think you watch as much football. You try and learn all the time. The new footballers coming through today are a different specimen altogether. They live, breathe, and everything football. What would I have done to get more out of the game? It's an interesting one. I was always a team player. I never really had that selfish, and I love it. You know, I played with strikers that wouldn't talk. Even if you won the game, if they hadn't scored, they hadn't done their job. And wow. I wish I had more of that about, you know, so a little bit more, being a little bit more selfish rather than selfless when it comes to the team sport, because I think then you get that little bit more. Like, look at Ronaldo, you know, very much he does what he does for the team, but you don't get there if you don't have that that drive and that I want to be the best. And that was probably a little bit lacking.
Okay, he's got two more questions. He said, what was the best advice you were given?
The best advice I was given? That's a great question, by the way. I guess go with your gut. You know, to do with everything. You know, you yourself know yourself about any decision that you have to make. And it's like what your gut says to you, you know. I think the head can play a strong part, the heart can play a strong part, but the gut knows. So I think, I guess, have trust in your own instinct, I would say.
Love it. And the final question from my client is, what would be the best advice you could give to a young academy player right now?
Get back on. You know, there's going to be disappointment ahead for everyone, no matter the successful career. There's always going to be disappointment. You have to keep going. You have to. In life, in every walk of life.
I love it, mate.
There's going to be curveballs getting thrown at you left, right and centre. There's going to be disappointment. You have to get back on the bike, as they say. You have to keep going. If you believe in it, if you want it that bad, that's what you've got to do.
Love it. Okay, mate. So, a few more from me. Let's talk about, obviously, you know, you're so busy with TalkSport. It's really great. You know, I've been following you on Instagram and, you know, I'm driving into the gym and they're going, and now we're going to speak to Chris Iwuelemo. I'm like, oh, I'm talking to Chris. Brilliant. What was it? When did you know that it was time to retire? What was that transition like? And before we get into like where you are now, what, because like, you know, you retired at 35, 36, you're now 42. What was that like initially?
Yeah, well, I've got to say it was probably a little bit easier for me than it is for most, for the fact I went through divorce the last year and a half of my career. So football does really take a kind of back seat, you understand, because nothing prepares you for divorce. Honestly, right. It just drains you. It's everything. Right. It's like, so the mind's probably not in that. And to be fair, in that time, you get promoted with Scunthorpe, but you win the Scottish Cup with St Johnson. So there is nice distractions along the way, but you're not the person that you were before it all started, you understand? So I remember it was after we won the Scottish Cup with St Johnson, I was in that kind of frame of mind, you know, it's probably about time now. The divorce, the decree absolute came through probably the first, second week in August. So basically, I was player coach at Chester Football Club in the National League, just for the fact that one of my good friends, Steve Burr, has met me and he says, look, I still think you've got a lot to bring. Your experience, your character in the dressing room, and obviously we'll give you a coaching role. I've done my A license, I've got my coaching badges. So it was one of those that made me thinking, you know what, right, okay, that's where, let's see how that journey goes, maybe go into the coaching and management. As a player, you just felt that your mind's thinking things, but your body couldn't do it.
Sure. Yeah.
Just,
yeah. Yeah.
You were just that. You were a couple of seconds off. You weren't as, you know what. And to be fair, Mark, I got told with the first operation that I had when I was 18, by the way, playing for St Mirren in a cup game, that they took about 70% of my lateral meniscus away. So basically, that halves your career. So I got told I'd only play till I was 27, 28. So wow. I had So from 21, 22, I had bone on bone. So I had a microfracture. I've had two microfractures, by the way, where they drill into the bone and it makes the bone bleed and new bone comes. I've had that done twice. But like I still go out running now. I retired at 36. I never really started making the real money in football till I was 28. Signed a three-year contract at Charlton, three-year contract at Wolves, three-year contract at Burnley, two-year contract at Watford. That time when I get told that I was going to be, my career's going to be over, that's when I kicked on. I never really missed much days training. I never trained inside domes on AstroTurf. If the training was cancelled and that's where they went, I'd just go into the gym. All managers, all physios, all sports scientists knew that, so I'd get my program from the gym. So it was managed, you know, but most days on grass, I'm there every day. You know, so I do know how lucky I was. So at 36, when it's starting. Maybe I'm at Chester Football Club, so the managing of my knees probably not to the same level as what I've been used to. So you're going to get little niggles. You're going to have that discomfort, and maybe that played a part. But it was the right time, and like you say, I was very lucky that I was already doing little bits with the media. If it was BBC Radio Stoke, Signal Radio, going down to Talksport to cover a game.
Wow.
Out of pocket, by the way, because sure, you have sure. to pay for yeah, your yeah. travel, and you only, but you have to do it. You have
to
do it. There was a point that you have to say yes to everything. So very lucky when I was retired. I'm doing a little bit, not making ends meet, to be honest with you. Obviously, you've got your pension as a footballer. You can get your pension a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
So you're living off that. You're basically. But then all of a sudden, I took my daughters to swimming lessons, and I met the old head of media at Stoke City, and he's actually the head lecturer at Stash University for the professional sports writing and broadcasting degree that I'd done. So the journalism degree, and once it was a 2-year basically. It was an intense course that was PFA funded as well.
Brilliant.
As soon as I graduated from that with first class honours, by the way, which surprised me, by the way, but
amazing,
loved every
mate.
Minute of it. Everything, it was snowball effect, domino effect, Talksport jumped on board, Stoke City, they asked me to come and join their media team. So I worked with Stoke City Football Club, with the Stoke City media team. I do Wolves TV. I'm very much part of that media team, and Talksport, BBC Scotland now. And like you're saying, I do a weekly podcast with A View to the Terrace. And obviously, like, I'm here doing this. So I've done a couple this week as well with the Euros and Scotland doing so well. So it's been fantastic.
Mate, I've got to say, like, your energy is amazing. I'm just feeding off it here, mate, honestly. And the way you talk about everything from the game, the highs, the lows, it's awesome, mate. I can really feel that kind of positivity from you. I do want to ask you, though, because you said before we started recording, you said kind of nothing's off limits. You said that you struggled a little bit with mental health. I know I did. I struggled a lot in my mid to late 20s, which actually drove me into the fitness industry. You know, I was on meds and stuff like that. And I wanted to kind of fix. I used to be a nightclub promoter back in the day. And I think sort of years of kind of partying and that kind of caught up with me. And I just wanted to change my lifestyle, fix myself. And it's been a whole kind of 15 years from 27 to 42 of self-discovery. I've discovered self-development, do a lot of law of attraction, meditation, gratitude. Do you want to just give me a few little insights as we round up this amazing 45 minutes with your story?
Well, again, I was at Watford, like you say, going through divorce. No one would really have a clue. You don't really speak. You've got to remember, I was travelling to Watford from the Midlands, so there was a car school. It was Carl Dickinson, Troy Deeney, John Eustace, and myself, and it was the four of us, and we travelled down, and they wouldn't have a clue. You know, I'm such a big character. You know, so when I walk in the building, everyone knows that Chris Whelan was in the building because that's the way that I've always been. So it was kind of I put a mask on. It was kind of an act. So that was very draining for me. So basically, I would only eat at the football club. So you'd go in, you'd eat breakfast at the football club, even though you've been in the car probably 2.5-3 hours on the way there. I'd then train, I'd have my lunch, you'd make sure you eat a lot. I'd go back. As soon as you get in the house, you're shattered. I'd go to bed, and all of a sudden, my alarm's going for the following day. You know, at 6 o'clock, it's felt like you've not slept. You know, you've got that many things going on in your head. I managed to do this for about probably 6-7 weeks. You know, you've got to remember, this is throughout a season. This is your training, your playing.
What was the trigger, do you think, for feeling like this?
I don't know. I just felt exhausted. You know, I felt that there was no appetite. I felt that around the club I had to eat because people are monitoring you all the time. They make sure that you've came in 8 after training because you'd get a fine if you never turned up. You made sure that you were hydrated because you're getting urine tests to see if you're hydrated enough. Things like that. So you had to make sure that you'd done something. But at home, I was just that physically exhausted that one day I remember I was walking from the canteen to the dressing room, and one of the players must have been walking behind me and says, "Oh, big man, you need to go on the calf raises." You know, it was bizarre because I've always had good legs, you know, like proper calf. So I must have been losing weight because of the stress, because I'm not eating properly, because I'm going out there training every day. And it was one of the things I decided before I'd even got to the actual changing rooms that I'm going to go see the doctor. So that player, if he hadn't said that, you'd probably try, you'd probably carry on. But just for the fact he said that, I said to Dr. Ritten at Watford Football Club, look, doctor, this is what I'm going through. This is what's going on. He never even broke stride. I was on antidepressants for about 2.5 years. I qualified for my A license, my UEFA A license, under obviously on medication. Watford, it was a fantastic season at Watford that I had, and then it was just one of them. It was they put me on serotonin.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It was something. So it was something that the body naturally releases anyway when you go to the gym and when you go and so. But it was just. He just said, you know what, he still had to come in when you got drug tested and all that, had to fill out all the forms to say that this is what I was on. But it was kept very discreet. The players, even McCaskill, wouldn't have known that I was.
No.
But it was something that just kind of calmed me down a little bit, you know.
Sure.
It just kind of kept me at a level. And it was about, I remember it was New Year's Eve 2014, so going into 2015, that I thought, you know what, because it slows down the metabolism as well, and I felt that I was maybe putting on a lot of weight, even though I was going to the gym a lot. So I thought, you know what, I'm going to put them to the side, and I'm going to go to the gym six times a week. And that was it. I would go there, even if I was just going on a bike, even if I was going there active, going out. I went out walks and that anyway, but I think that the football inside of my head, like if I go out on the bike, I still don't feel like it's a workout unless I've went out running and you're breathing out your backside. You understand? It's like, but I've kind of learned to kind of get to terms with that, and that's what I've done, and that's how I've lived my life. You know, I've been in a hotel now 10, 11 nights, and I've been out running probably six, seven mornings.
Yeah.
But there's been some mornings that I can't run, so you just try and go out and do something different, go a walk. We played some golf the other day, which is important, you know. So it is, I think it's especially the climate that we're in now, you know, being a very difficult 16, 18 months, hasn't it?
100%.
So I think it's important, but it's a safe space to talk about now.
Yeah.
People can say, you know what, I don't feel all right. And you know what, that's okay.
Yeah.
But talk about it.
Yeah,
because getting that out there makes us all feel better, and that's why I think it's important that we have that discussion.
And you've created so much awareness now, being in the public eye, just saying this, and I think it's really important. I want to sort of follow up there. We're almost done. I know you've given me such great value so far, but when I had depression, a lot of people say, oh, they feel a bit down or this, that, and the other, but it was a physical thing. I would sleep for 9 hours and I'd wake up exhausted, and you're going,
exhausted.
What is this? Yeah. I've just slept tonight, and you wake up as if you've not been to sleep, and it's a physical thing, and it all comes down to your chemical balance in your head and things like that. But I think that it's very easy, like I said, the last 16, 17 months with the pandemic, I know myself personally, I quit alcohol for a period of time. I did about 250 days off. I wasn't a big drinker, but I got into that kind of the first lockdown, you know, just a couple every night and things like that.
Yeah.
And I just realized it wasn't serving me. And I've struggled a lot with it and what's going on and stuff like that. And for me, I just go, right, sleep. Got to make sure that's a priority. Hydration, outdoors in fresh air, listening to audiobooks and my training. And if I'm doing all that, I'm ticking those boxes, then I'm giving this the best chance possible, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that more and more, I think, needs to be, look at him getting hydrated now. more and more needs to be put into the public eye about this kind of mental health, especially now with the pandemic. And as we're, you know, it was the summer solstice yesterday, we're going to be autumn before we know it, and hopefully no more lockdowns. So I think that we all just need to be kind to ourselves, mate, and talk openly. So Chris, listen, mate, it's been 45 minutes of absolute fire. I honestly feel like I've known you years, and we literally did 2 minutes before we hit go. I'm so grateful to you, mate. And this is going to give the guy so much value, but we've got a huge Scottish contingent of online members, so they're going to love it. They're going to love it. So all I can say is thank you, mate. I really, really appreciate it. I've got your number now, so I am going to tap you up to see if you can line up a guest for me. Tomo said he'll pass on to Chris, and he said, see if Chris can line you up with somebody like a retired footballer, somebody we think
might
be. And that's how I kind of want to do it, buddy, all right?
So no problem at all.
Brilliant, yeah. Get the old grey matter thinking about that. I'll stay in touch, mate. And if you're stuck for a hotel room workout, mate, I've got loads on YouTube I can send you. But good luck, mate, with Scott. I'm an Englishman, but wishing you Scotsmen all the best now for Tuesday's game. Anything could happen. I was just saying to my dad before, we could go out. England could go out. You know, anything could happen. So let's see where we are. I will get this saved. I'll get this uploaded in the next week, and then obviously I'll tag you on all forums. So, big Chris, an absolute pleasure.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And I really, really appreciate it. I'm gonna stop recording now. Okay, guys. So just to let you know, edition 2 of the Coach Strikes podcast. Hope you enjoy it. Leave a comment and don't forget to subscribe.